This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight. A medical trial in Britain shows its coronavirus vaccine is 90% effective. Somalia marks 30 years since the outbreak of its civil war. And violence in the Central African Republic forces 200,000 people to flee their homes. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The U.S.-based Novavax pharmaceutical company says a medical trial in Britain shows its coronavirus vaccine is almost 90% effective against COVID-19 and a variant found there. However, it is much less effective against a variant first identified in South Africa and now spreading around the world, including the U.S. Darren Taylor reports.
The Novavax trials are the first to test vaccine efficacy against the variants found late last year in the UK and South Africa. The variants, especially the one called 501YV2 and identified in South Africa, are more infectious and transmissible. Scientists say reactions to the Novavax vaccine results depend on your location at this point in time in the pandemic. If you're Kate Bingham, the former chair of the UK government's vaccine task force, being interviewed by the BBC about the vaccine being more than 89% effective in Britain, you're obviously very happy.
It's a fantastic result because it shows that the Novavax vaccine is effective against both the UK variant as well as the South African variant and has shown phenomenal efficacy, and it's made in Teesside. So not only have we trialled the vaccine to show that it's safe and effective, but we're also making it too. So we'll be able to save lives in the UK.
But the vaccine won't save as many lives in South Africa and in other places where the 501YV2 variant is or becomes prevalent. That's because it's proven only 60% effective against that variant, and even less so in South Africa, because when the country's many HIV-infected people are taken into account, the vaccine's efficacy drops to just 49%. But South African medical researchers are looking on the bright side and say the Novavax vaccine and the others currently available remain extremely valuable.
If there's a vaccine and it comes my way at the moment, I will take that vaccine.
Professor Penny Moore is a scientist at South Africa's National Institute of Communicable Diseases. She says vaccines, no matter the efficacy percentages and other data, are the best hope to stop COVID-19 and its mutations. But Moore says we shouldn't forget about other safety measures to prevent infection.
So we need to continue to use the masks and do the social distancing and sanitize, because those tools are as effective against the new variant as they were against the old variant.
Novavax says it'll develop a vaccine designed to protect against the variant found in South Africa. Moore says there is potential to tweak vaccines using the same pipelines that were used to rapidly develop the current inoculations. But there's a caveat.
We're consistently dealing, I think, in the future with emerging variants, more and more of these variants. And so we might need to be a little bit cleverer in how we design those vaccines. We might need to look for...
She says scientists may need to make vaccines that target areas where new variants are, in effect, weaker.
And we might need to look for other parts of the virus that cannot change so effectively and try to design vaccines to that. But there are lots of ways in which we can do that. We've, as a global community, never moved this fast in developing vaccines, so we can harness all those technologies to
South African scientists say the best ways to fight new variants are to continue mass vaccinations and for people to practice the well-known measures like social distancing to limit infections. The fewer the infections, they say, the less opportunity the virus will have to mutate even further. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As Nigeria awaits to take delivery of its first COVID-19 vaccine doses by February, there are concerns about how people will accept them. Reporter Gifta Gariga from Abuja, Nigeria, takes a look at the conspiracy theories surrounding the vaccines.
The government remains concerned about acceptance of the COVID-19 vaccines. Many Nigerians believe they may be harmful to their health or contain microchips and alter human genetics. The government has debunked this, saying it is doing its best to allay the growing hesitancy among Nigerians. A cross-section of Nigerians on why they won't get jabbed with the vaccine.
It depends. I may take the vaccine if it comes to Nigeria.
I will not take the vaccine because I take precautions and I also build my immunity. Well, it depends on where the vaccine is coming from, the government that are bringing it in. If it's Nigerian government, I don't think I will take it.
I wouldn't say yes to it if I want to get vaccinated or not. The fact remains that if I see that government are being serious about it, together with NAFDAC and all with the pharmaceutical companies, I'll have to really wait. And I wouldn't say I'll be among the 50% that want to be vaccinated, because I have to ascertain if really it's coming directly from US.
I will take it if I hear again from NAFDAC marking a very serious campaign that this very vaccine now has come out and is coming out from US, not even China.
Right now, my answer is no. I would only take the vaccine on two conditions. Number one, if it's been certified and okay for me to take it. And number two, if our government will start, then there's evidence that they've taken it. Based on this, I'll take it.
The government said the National Agency for Food and Drug Administration and Control is mandated to certify the vaccine's safety. The agency's Director General, Professor Mojisola Adeyeye, advised Nigerians to disregard the conspiracy theories.
It is all inaccurate misinformation, and we don't need to worry about that. NAFDAC will do the due diligence. Anything that is going to hurt a single person in Nigeria, my own responsibility is to ensure that we prevent that from happening.
Adeyeye assured Nigerians it is safe to get the COVID-19 vaccine.
Primary Health and NAFDAC will be working together to monitor side effects or adverse events following immunization as soon as an individual receives the vaccine.
A chief medical director, Gregory University Specialist Hospital in Abia State, Dr. Ojum Ekoma Ogo, advocated for an aggressive campaign to educate Nigerians on the safety of the vaccine.
Massive alignment is needed for people to accept the vaccines. We are doing our own local campaigns around so that people will accept the vaccine. Of course, we've had problems before trying to convince people, and we'll do it again.
The vaccines will be administered first to health workers, top government officials, and vulnerable people. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga.
As Somalia marks 30 years since the outbreak of civil war, a top United Nations official is urging its leaders to redouble their efforts to reach consensus ahead of February polls. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking to journalists after leading a high-level UN delegation to the Horn of African country, the UN Secretary General's Special Representative for Somalia, James Swan, said the international community was involved in efforts to advance the country's national elections.
I have recently traveled to a number of the federal member states for direct conversations with their leaders. We've had bilateral meetings with senior Somali officials, including the president, the prime minister, ministers, key opposition figures. So there has been a serious effort to engage all the players, encourage them to seek common ground, encourage them to pursue dialogue and compromise.
Somalia's presidential general elections are planned for February 8th. After repeated delays due to political disagreements, President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, popularly known as Farmajo, is seeking a second four-year term. The UN envoy added that on various occasions, the international community has expressed opposition to parallel or alternative processes and made clear there must be no violence.
What is eagerly desired is agreement on the way forward prior to February 8th. It seems very likely this will extend for some additional period of time. What's important, we think, is to have an agreement on the way forward so that everyone can be confident in what the process entails. That will also be the best way to reduce the risk of violence or disruption by those who may feel disadvantaged or left out of the process.
Swan urged restraint in an ongoing diplomatic row between Kenya and Somalia that has raised tensions between the East African neighbors.
We certainly share views that have been expressed by others in the region, including senior leaders from the African Union, that de-escalation and restraint would be desirable along the border between Somalia and Kenya. International partners have in fact communicated over the past year on several occasions, urging restraint, urging de-escalation in Gedo, along the border.
But Swan, who also heads the UN assistance mission in Somalia, said it's important to acknowledge the progress made since the collapse of President Siad Barre's government in January 1991.
If we look at a range of measures, governance, the functioning of national and federal member state institutions, private sector investment, public financial management, delivery of services, to name a few, Somalia begins 2021 in a better place than 2011, and a better place than 2001, and a better place than the end of January 1991.
Somalia is one of the world's most fragile nations due to decades of civil conflict, recurrent drought, and floods. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Refugee Agency says violence, which erupted ahead of the Central African Republic's general election at the end of December, has forced more than 200,000 people to flee their homes in search of safety. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Around 100,000 people are displaced inside the Central African Republic. Another 105,000 have fled as refugees to neighboring countries. The UN Refugee Agency reports most of the refugees, around 92,000, crossed into the Democratic Republic of Congo, with the rest going to Cameroon, Chad, and the Republic of Congo. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshakov says conditions are particularly dire for the tens of thousands of refugees in the DRC. He says they are scattered across 40 localities in remote, hard-to-reach areas.
The needs are acute for food, for shelter. We're having reports already of even some resorting to survival sex because they're not able to cope. Beside that, we also need health support. The threat of the spread of diseases, including COVID-19, is there. That means that we need to see more humanitarian actors involved.
For that to happen, he says the international community must be more generous in supporting aid operations. So far, he notes, only 2% of this year's $151.5 million UN funding appeal for the CAR has been received. Cheshakov says continuing volatility inside the Central African Republic is hampering aid from reaching those who are internally displaced. He says the presence of armed groups in two IDP camps is putting people sheltering there at great risk.
What we are receiving is very troubling reports of human rights violations as these armed groups are moving, some of them retreating, and they are moving through villages. We're hearing reports of pillaging, of sexual violence that is increasing rapidly, and this situation is really concerning.
The UNHCR is calling on the armed groups to stop the violence and to resolve their differences through peaceful dialogue. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Sudanese Journalist Network, SJN, has accused Sudan's military of blocking journalists from the troubled Darfur region. Recent clashes there left hundreds of people dead and more than 100,000 displaced. Sudan's military initially cited the security situation for the ban, but in a statement Wednesday denied any such ban exists. Naba Mohadin has more from Khartoum.
The issue began when a correspondent for Al Jazeera Television applied for a travel permit to Darfur and her application was rejected. Many other journalists say they were also denied permission to go to Darfur. The Sudanese Journalist Network, SJN, called on the journalists to stand up for freedom of the press.
But
he says the network is taking a strong standing in this decision, and they refuse any attitudes or practices by the former regime. He says journalists shall stand against any attempt to take away the freedom of press and free expression and will not allow it at all. The Sudanese military is denying the allegations. It says it has been facilitating access for the journalists and correspondents in different volatile regions of Sudan, including the tense northeastern border with Ethiopia. Sudan's Ministry of Information issued a press statement Wednesday backing up the military's stance. Youssef Ndosa is part of the committee to restore the Sudanese Journalist Union, which was shut down after the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. Ndosa condemned the denials. Ndosa says, "This is so disappointing that as journalists, we can't do our duty to inform the people and the world what is going on in Jenina. There are thousands of displaced families, killed and injured people. Only a journalist could reflect what is going on in the ground. To restrict a journalist is an apostasy and a disappointing attitude from a government supposed to represent the revolution." The Sudanese Journalist Network was honored with Press Freedom Award last year by Reporters Without Borders for its stance on freedom of the press and its role in pushing for political change in Sudan. UN agencies say at least 117,000 people have been internally displaced because of last week's intercommunal clashes in Darfur, with thousands fleeing to neighboring Chad. Naba Muhyiddin for VUA News, Khartoum.
The Nigerian subsidiary of Royal Dutch Shell has been found responsible for oil leaks in the Niger Delta. A Dutch appeals court today ordered the company to pay unspecified damages to farmers. According to a Reuters report, the amount of compensation will be determined later. The case was filed in 2008 by four farmers and the environmental group Friends of the Earth. They were seeking reparations for lost income for contaminated land and waterways in the Delta region, the heart of Nigeria's oil industry. Shell at first pushed back against the accusation by arguing the oil spills had been caused by sabotage. The appeals court, however, said Shell had not proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Although for now only Shell's Nigerian subsidiary was found responsible, the decision could pave the way for more environmental cases against the company. Botswana's president, Mokgweetsi Masisi, left for Namibia today to meet his counterpart, Hage Geingob Gobe. They will discuss, among other issues, Botswana's army's recent killing of four suspected poachers from Namibia, which led to tensions between the two neighbors. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
Before leaving for Windhoek, Masisi said it was critical to address any outstanding issues with Namibia. He said they will discuss the November killing of four suspected poachers from Namibia by his country's soldiers. Namibia accused Botswana of killing innocent fishermen, while Habrone maintained the four were poachers.
I'm going to meet my counterpart, Geingob. The reason for my visit is to continue to enhance the two countries' relations. Like in any other relationship, they are misunderstanding. There is the issue of the recent killings. Want to resolve the issue amicably.
The Botswana army killed the four men in the wildlife rich Chobe region to the west of the country. The fatal shooting sparked outrage in Namibia, with Botswana trucks entering the neighboring country stoned in December. Both countries agreed to a joint investigation into the incident, but the report has been not made public. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
COVID-19 cases are not decreasing in Zimbabwe and efforts to secure vaccines are moving slowly. So a lockdown introduced in early January has been extended. Reporter Kudzai Zanwashi has the report.
Constantino Chiwenga is vice president and health minister. He says officials are looking at the possibility of new variants of the virus.
We have a likelihood of a new strains and variants circulating. These strains are more transmissible and infectious. We are doing genomic sequencing to see if these strains are in our environment. Results will be published as soon as we have them. Government will soon be bringing in vaccines against COVID-19.
He says the new cases have been averaging 300 a day over the past week, with 20 deaths daily. Cumulative cases since the 1st of January till date are at 14,084 cases and 369 deaths. He adds that since the COVID-19 cases have not been decreasing, they have been prompted to extend the lockdown.
We bemoan the fact that Zimbabweans are dying at all. Any death is one death too many. Still, we need to stay the course by upping our vigilance. It is in light of this that His Excellency the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, Comrade Dr. Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa, has decided to extend the level 4 national lockdown by another 2 weeks to the 15th of February 2021.
The biggest losers remain the majority of Zimbabweans in the informal sector, who have been eager to go back to work and fend for their loved ones. Chiwenga said they are aware their decisions carries hardships.
The president fully appreciates the difficulties which come with this extension. Livelihoods are being disrupted, yet we must save lives and our nation.
Experts foresee the lockdowns continuing throughout the first quarter of the year. Critics worry that the longer the lockdown continues, with the absence of social security nets to help vulnerable families, lockdown regulations are likely to be broken, despite the new scale of fines for violations. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.